Well, let's kick it off this morning with Jeff Welton. Unless you have been living under a rock or are from another planet, you know who Jeff is. And if that's the case, welcome to Wisconsin. We're glad to have you here. Since starting at Nautel in 1990, Jeff spent 18 years in customer service, both in the office and as a field technician, before moving to sales about 8 years ago. We still like him. He's done over 100 presentations covering various aspects of transmitter and facility maintenance and repair, including a few presentations for the WBA. I think it's actually more than a few. Jeff and Nautel are great supporters of our education efforts here in Wisconsin, and we are grateful for that. Please welcome Jeff Welton.
Check, check, check. There we go. All right, we're on. Don't tell anybody, but the clock hasn't started yet. That gives me an extra 30 seconds. We'll use every single one of them. Don't touch that button. All right, we're going to do a little bit of audience participation here just real quick. Oh, darn it, the clock just started. How many people maintain or are responsible for? This will be useful. How many people maintain or are responsible for an FM station? All right, keep your hands up for a second. That's what I said, participation. Got to get your blood flowing. It's early in the morning. It's brisk out there. Okay, now, of you guys, how many of you are located near or know of being located near an LTE build-out? Everybody else can put their hands down, but no, look, most of the hands are staying up. Now, of the ones that are left, how many have had an interference complaint from their LTE provider? Still got a few hands. Okay, you guys can put your hands down. Everybody that already put their hands down and hasn't had a complaint yet, buckle up. There's some interesting challenges here. How many people have run a spectrum analyzer before? Almost everybody. Now, when you plug a spectrum analyzer in, turn it on, it hits the default setting, runs full-scale sweep. Where's the noise floor usually sit? About how many dB down for most analyzers? 90? 90, 95, 100 for a really good one? So how easy do you think it's going to be to pull a signal out at 108 dB down? That's where we're going to go with this. Okay, which buttons? Oh, look, forward. They even put a label on it. I guess I should read the instructions. So we're going to talk about a few things. Is anybody familiar with Shannon's theory? It's officially the Shannon-Hartley theorem. Few hands coming up. For the people that aren't, we'll get into that. We'll show the math of simplified version of it, talk about why it's important. We're going to discuss some of the legalities of this. As most of you know, LTE is becoming a very big thing. There's a huge rollout underway. There are some areas where it's not there yet, but it's coming. And it's something you need to be aware of. There are some things you can do because I can almost guarantee you that these kind of complaints will be inevitable. To give you an example, I wrote a paper about this last November for our in-house Waves newsletter, which you can find on our website. There's my plug for the day. If you look at that paper, when I wrote it, November 2014, I had taken exactly two calls in the past 6 months about LTE interference. If you fast forward to last week, I'm now up to 42 calls. All different situations. All right? Those are just the ones I know of with our gear. I'm aware of several others with other gear. It's not brand specific. So Shannon's theory. Shannon's theory is basically, call it Nyquist for digital. It tells you the maximum data rate you can achieve for a given bandwidth with a given power level at a specific noise level. All right, Now, with LTE, you've got a requirement to get a specific data rate. You need a specific band or bit rate, bandwidth, whatever. And if you can't increase the power, the only thing you can do is try to haul the receiver further down into the noise floor. FM transmitters generate some noise. Where this gets interesting is that a lot of the complaints we're seeing are the result of cabinet radiation. Okay, noise. And remember that your FM transmitter, if you're on 100 megahertz, your eighth harmonic is on 800 megahertz. If you're at the low end, your ninth. If you're at the high end, your seventh. Those three harmonics can all come into the LTE band. Now, just to give you, as I said earlier, a reference point, you're looking at receivers on the LTE sites that are trying to pull a signal out 108 dB down. Even your radiated signals, according to the FCC spec, only had to be 80 dB down for a high power station, less than that for a low power station. Once you get below a kilowatt, it's a 43 10 log P, right? So they're looking for a signal about 28 dB below what the FCC says your minimum radiated signal has to be. Here's the tricky part. Cabinet radiation has no specification in the United States. The FCC has no requirement for limitations on cabinet radiation. All right, keep that in the back of your mind. Most of the AT&T complaints, does anybody here work for AT&T? I don't mean to single them out if they do. Nobody's going to admit to it, okay. I'll try to be kind, but the citations I've seen or the complaints I've seen all reference Part 15. Does everybody know what Part 15 refers to? Alan? Unintentional radiation from an unlicensed device. Broadcast transmitter doesn't qualify as a Part 15 device. Part 73, Part 15. Licensed, not licensed, kind of different things. So what they're trying to use would work for a garage door opener, but it doesn't necessarily apply to a broadcast transmitter. Look at this. See, I've already covered all that. So basically, as I said, the lower the noise floor is, the more data they can stuff through. Well, unfortunately, the noise floor is not really something that you've got a lot of control over. Between the Part 15 radiators and the broadcast transmitters with cabinet radiation and harmonics coming out the pipe, there's going to be some noise relative to what they're looking at. Okay, so this is the relevant part of the CFR, the Code of Federal Regulations, with respect to interference. And I've highlighted a few of them. Okay, so if you got a newer transmitter, remembering that this is broadcast radio, right? So anything after 1960 qualifies as newer. Hey, I'm newer. All right, and if you've got older equipment, it says just do the best you can. And basically what they're saying is what we said before, 43 plus 10 log power in dB below carrier or 80 dB, whichever is lesser amount of attenuation. Okay, so everybody's happy with that, except for this caveat right here. And this is the one, when I wrote the paper last November, of course, LTE is not my strong suit. I've been working with radio transmitters for 25 years, but I've mostly been limited between 190 and 108 megahertz, or 190 kilohertz and 108 meg. So once you get up into this 800, almost near gigahertz, this is a little unique to me. So when I wrote the article, I ended up referring to a couple of people. And you're going to want to write these names down just because it's something you'll be able to Google later and it's not going to show up in the presentation. You can always refer to the audio file on the Chapter 24 website after they get it archived. But if you've got the notes, you won't have to remember it. Number one, I spoke to John Garziglia. Anybody here know John? Especially if you work in the South, he's pretty popular. But John is a DC attorney. He works a lot with this sort of thing, interference complaints, things like that. And what John said was, although nobody has invoked a challenge at this point relative to the harmful interference, he can see it coming. Now, historically, the FCC has always worked with the grandfather clause. First in, not your problem. Here's the hiccup. What happens if you buy a new transmitter? What happens if you replace an antenna? What happens if you replace an exciter? At that point, you're not first in anymore. Okay, that's a potential source of challenge. It's something you need to think about, something to be aware of. Okay, the other thing, and this I did, again, John wrote a couple of paragraphs for the article in November. As I said, if you go to our website under resources, under support, sorry, there's a tips and tricks section for the column that I write for our in-house newsletter, and you can reference the article there. I'm not going to rehash something that's already been published. But one of the things John mentioned was that the potential does exist for a civil suit totally separate from the FCC, which may or may not actually gain enough traction to cause you some issue. At the very least, it's going to be legal fees and lawyer bills. I don't know about y'all, but the last lawyer I encountered didn't work cheap. So that's something to remember. Okay, the civil litigation is a possibility. So it's really in your best interest if you do get a complaint, don't just puff out your chest and say, we're legal, it's your problem. Because I promise you, the phone companies have a lot more lawyers on staff than you've got on retainer. All right, a cooperative approach is definitely the best way to go. Don't admit there's anything wrong, because 99 times out of 100 there isn't. You can be 100% totally legal and still stomp all over an LTE site. All right, but there are things that you can do to work with them. Every case I've run into so far, and as I say, I'm up into the 40s now, every single case, the cell company has been willing to work with the broadcaster after the initial chest thumping period goes by. Because the first thing you'll do is get a letter from them saying, hey, you're interfering, shut your transmitter off. It's almost exactly the way it's worded. There's a lot of legal stuff because the lawyer's got to justify the bill. But that's effectively what it says. Now, usually everyone I've run into, the engineer and folks over at the cell company will approach the station. This is where it's important for management and engineering to talk to each other, because I had a case where the phone company engineers went to the station manager. That went back and forth for a month. Nothing got resolved because the engineer never got brought into it at all until the phone company sent a team of about 6 lawyers with a cease and desist. And then it got very expensive and very ugly. All right, so you need to sort of keep a line of communication open about this. It's easy enough to find if there's an LTE site nearby. You can Google that pretty quickly. Okay, so solutions. Now, as I said, cabinet radiation seems to be the biggest culprit. Does anybody, most of you have been by my booth yesterday, I've got a little VS300, a little 300-watt transmitter sitting over on the corner. Okay, if you've looked at it, you'll notice it's an aluminum box. It's got a lid, it's got a bottom, it's got two sides, a front and a back. Okay, there's one tiny air hole that big on the left-hand side for an air intake, because 300 watts at 60% efficiency doesn't generate a lot of heat. I've got two current LTE interference complaints on that exact model of transmitter. The cabinet radiation on that thing is 90 dB down from the carrier. Okay, it's beyond every specification in the world. However, one of the things you can do if you're buying a new transmitter, ask for CE compliance. It's a European standard, but at least it gives you a benchmark level. You know you're below that level at least. Like I said, the FCC does not have a cabinet radiation spec. So at least you've got something to point to where you know you're a little lower. If you're doing factory acceptance testing on a new transmitter purchase, if you're coming to the factory to observe the proofs of performance, ask them to do it. Ask your manufacturer. Make sure you ask them up front, because doing cabinet radiation measurements is a difficult thing. It requires getting away from electrical noise. And I know, speaking for us in Gates Air, we both do it the same way. We put a very sensitive, very expensive log periodic out in the parking lot with the transmitter out in the parking lot, trying to get away from all the electrical noise we generate in the buildings. So it does require a lot more work. There may be some cost added to it, but it's something you can request if you think you're walking into a problem situation, again, to give you a benchmark. Remembering, one more time, there is no specification in the US for this, for cabinet radiation. All this is doing is giving you the ability, in the event that it ends up in a court of law, to say, look, we did due diligence. We did everything we possibly could to accommodate. Okay, so that's one thing you can do. One of the other things you can do, the biggest leakage point typically are your ventilation ports, your intake and your exhaust air. Unless you have a duct hard bolted right to the roof of the transmitter or wherever the exhaust port is, there's a big open hole there for RF to leak out of. 800 megahertz, what's the wavelength of 800 megahertz? Anybody got a guess? I'm gonna say it's measured in inches. So it doesn't take a very big hole to leak some RF out. So one of the things you can do is use hardware cloth. Buy it at Home Depot or Grainger or wherever. Bolt the hardware cloth down. Remember, it needs to make an electrical connection to the chassis. You can put screen in between, like steel window screen, metal window screen. The caveat, make sure you don't restrict the airflow. All right, solving a cabinet radiation problem at the expense of cooking the transmitter is probably not a solution. I have no idea where I'm going to point this thing. I just wave it around till the slide advances. Okay, these pictures, incidentally, were taken by Walker Sisson. He's a contract consulting engineer over in Michigan, and this is specifically related to an LTE interference complaint that he had to deal with on one of our FM8s, I think it was. Okay, so plastic meters. If you've got analog meters on the front of your transmitter, another big source of potential leakage. You can build a cage to shield it, okay? Stuff like that. What you're basically doing is walking around the transmitter. You can do this with a spectrum analyzer. If you get a little loop antenna or a little directional, like a little log periodic, you can wave it around and look for the high points. You're not really trying to get any kind of exact measurement. You're just looking for a relative increase. Oh, when I point it here, the signal level goes up. That's something maybe I need to shield a little more. Okay. One other thing, I'm going to take a little sidetrack here. One other thing to be aware of is that while most of the phone company engineers are really highly trained, reasonably skilled and good at operating their equipment, They're used to measuring stuff and working with stuff that runs powers in the milliwatts to low, low, low number of watts. Not into watt levels that start with a K. All right, so definitely insist on a copy of their measurements if you get a complaint. And if you can get their engineer to come out and duplicate the measurement process with you, make sure he's actually doing it right. Okay? I mean, even today, we'll still get the occasional harmonic complaint. We'll go out to a site, do a site visit, and discover that the reason they're getting the harmonic complaint is because they weren't attenuating the fundamental and it's overdriving the front end of the analyzer. I see Cliff nodding. I think we've all run into this once or twice before. So as I said, get your little log periodic, attach it to your analyzer, wave it around, look for where the signal level comes up. Find leakage points. Okay, this is another one that Walker had on the FM8. He found that the space under the power modules, where they slide in on their trays, there's about a quarter inch by a 1 inch gap there. And that was a leakage point. So we went to a hobby shop, just got some brass corner stock, cut it to length, slammed it in there. Problem solved. You can get copper tape. Something to remember. Copper tape comes with two types of adhesive. Most copper tape you buy has a non-conductive adhesive, which kind of defeats the purpose of using copper tape to begin with. All right, so you want to be sure that you've got copper tape with a conductive adhesive. The link shown at the bottom of that picture is taken from a website that has copper tape with conductive adhesive. One other thing to remember, if you're going to copper tape a gap in something, doesn't do you any good if you're putting the tape on painted metal. You don't have a connection. Okay, it gives you a little bit of a shield just because it's a barrier, it's there, but not nearly as good. You might potentially end up creating an antenna instead of a shield. So make sure it's going on to bare metal, even if you're just hitting a screw head or something. If you're building a new site, this is an awesome solution. Now, if you go to this website on this link, you're going to look at it and go, wow, this is a real tinfoil hat website. And it is. I'm serious. I'm not joking. This website is for the folks that want all the RF out of their building forever, because RF isn't good for you. I don't know about that. I can kind of think it's better when the RF's flowing, but that's a personal perspective. I know it doesn't restrict your childbearing capabilities. That's a whole different story we're not going to get into right now with 20 minutes to go. However, this website has paint that has suspended copper particles in it. You can paint your entire transmitter room. And I say it's easy if you've got a small room for your transmitter, especially on a new build, but even on some existing ones, you can paint the room. It can be painted over if you don't like the idea of having a totally black room. I mean, the 80s have gone by a little bit. You know, that would have been really cool when I was a teenager. I think I would, little black light dots all over the place. Anyway, the other thing with this copper paint is they sell ground kits. So you paint the room with the copper paint, you install the ground kits, basically screw your strap or your ground kit to the wall of the room, run it down to your ground plane, and then paint over it, make it a part of the shield. You turn the whole room into a Faraday cage. Okay? All the RF is now contained within that room. Problem solved. Yeah, until you open the door, exactly. But then you can really mess with the LTE guys, because you can sit there. Can you hear me now? All right, I'm going to hit questions in a sec, but go ahead.
Don't forget to go out the door
Don't forget to... Yep. Yep, definitely. Ground your door, ground your window frames. I mean, the door especially, because the door is on hinges, it's not going to be, even if you paint it, necessarily a good connection. One other thing about this copper paint, it's not inexpensive. Because, consider the source, okay? I mean, how many $20,000 sets of audio cables have you seen recently, or oxygen-free power cords? Same concept. It runs, last time I checked, somewhere around $1,500 for a 5-gallon can. So it's a relative thing, but how much are you going to spend on lawyers fighting out an LTE interference case in court? You know? So, and keep in mind, this is what I was coming back to originally. If you maintain a non-adversarial approach, you talk to your cell company and you say, look, we know we're legal, we're complying with everything the FCC's got. We understand you guys are trying to do something that's a little beyond what physics would normally allow. We're willing to work with you, but if there's cost involved, we'd like you guys to look at it. I've had situations where phone companies have offered to buy new transmitters if we could prove that it would solve the problem. Now, here's the caveat. We can't prove that. Okay, and we'll come out right out and tell you. I mean, for several thousands of dollars, we could probably go out, do the measurements, go back to the office, do our measurements, and say we've got a reasonable expectation that we'll bring it down this far. But that would be a really last-ditch effort. The point is, though, that in some cases, at least, they are willing to work with you and help bear some of the cost because it's in their best interest. The farther apart they can put the LTE sites, the fewer sites they have to build. You know, I mean, what's it cost to build a transmitter site? It's not cheap. Yeah, Mark?
Oh, the hardware cloth you mentioned, it sounds like a very inexpensive alternative to the paint. And I know that I know of at least one radio studio building that was built that way originally. Very, very good idea and worked out great for them.
Yeah, and that's something else you can do if you're doing a new build. Hardware cloth the entire inside. The caveat that with hardware cloth, of course, you've got to physically, electromechanically bond all the connections. So it's a lot of soldering.
Connect it all. It was done years ago because of there was an AM transmitter on site, and so that. But it would work great for LTE as well. Thanks.
Yep, it absolutely would. All right, so I'm going to leave a little extra room for questions here. I kind of planned it this way because I know it's a pretty hot topic. So Shannon's theory is really being pushed to the limit here. I mean, when you're trying to haul a noise floor out 108 dB down, when the only limitation the FCC's given us as manufacturers and you as broadcasters is 80 dB on the antenna radiation for your harmonics, and no limitations at all on the cabinet radiation, then it creates a really big challenge. A lot of times we're seeing sites because anybody tried to put up a tower in a residential area recently? It's not cheap. It's not easy. It involves a lot of planning committee and all the NIMBYs telling you why that can't be done. Or what was the other one? Banana. Build absolutely nothing anywhere, nowhere, nearby, whatever. Point being that what's happening in a lot of cases is that radio stations, new stations being built, are being put on cell towers. Where do you think the cell company is going to put their LTE receiver? On a tower they already have, because they've got the same problem that y'all have when it comes to trying to build a new site. Okay? The funny thing is that of all the interference cases I've dealt with, as I said, the vast majority come back to they're pointing to cabinet radiation. So you do the shielding you can do, whether it's on the transmitter with hardware cloth and copper tape, whether it's in the room with hardware cloth or tinfoil hat paint. I've run into a couple that consisted, I had one where the problem was a loose connection on a coax cable going to an unused antenna on the tower, unused dipole. It was re-radiating. I've had a couple where a coax going up the tower where the ground kits hadn't properly been installed was causing the problem. Okay, has anybody ever had to deal with just a plain old FM re-radiation issue where any kind of loose connection becomes a lovely little diode antenna? See a few hands. This is the same deal, only on a much bigger scale. Okay. As I said earlier, try to be non-confrontational about it. Be firm that you know you're legal, if you're 100% sure you're legal. If you're not 100% sure you're legal, being firm you're legal can be a problem. And try to work with them instead of fighting about it, because remember, they have lawyers on staff who are getting paid anyway. So they're going to write stuff up because that's what they're getting paid to do. Okay? And any shielding you do end up doing on the transmitter, do not mess with your airflow. Because again, solving the interference problem at the expense of cooking your equipment is kind of counterproductive. Okay? CE specs are stricter than FCC specs because any spec is stricter than no spec. LTE receivers typically operate, now I said very near, what I should have said was under the noise floor. As we said, if you plug in an analyzer without anything connected to it and run it through the sweep, it's going to be showing you a noise floor about 15 to 20 dB higher than what these guys are trying to receive. And definitely, if you do get a complaint, fairly early in the process, it might be useful to talk to your own FCC attorney. Okay, like I said, I know John Garzigli is familiar with this. I'm very certain that just about every FCC attorney out there is familiar with this. One person I didn't mention, the other thing you'll want to write down, is Scott Baxter. Scott Baxter is a consulting engineer out of Tennessee, Nashville, I think. Scott has done a tremendous amount of work with this. Okay, some of the information in here came from his website with his permission. He's given me permission to post his link. He says anybody can use anything off his website anytime, and he's been very open to being contacted if you do have a specific problem. Okay, I've referred a couple of customers to him in the Tennessee area, but I don't know, he may be willing to travel. He's a Tennessee boy. Don't bring him up here in January. That'd just be cruel. Okay, let's wrap that part up and we'll start hitting the hands. All right, we got hands everywhere. Alex, you got the mic?
I do.
Are you wearing pants?
I am wearing pants.
All right.
You're welcome. In my instance, we're State University, and we're the tower owner, so to speak. It's the top of a dorm. So we were there first by many, many years, except that I bought a brand new backup transmitter from that guy. And AT&T and Verizon are up there. But it wasn't the transmitter causing my LTE interference. How many have an IP STL now? Using Ubiquiti or Transio or any of the other Wi-Fi companies. The processor runs at a harmonic that hits them. Yeah, that was a fun one to find. And that one does qualify under Part 15.
And this is one of those situations where I was talking about earlier, get a spectrum analyzer, a little log periodic, and start looking for where the signal at that frequency peaks. And just put it on a stick and wave it around your whole site. You know, it's like a fox hunt on a much bigger scale. Hey, who's next? Anybody else? I saw hands going up everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, Jeff, I have a question and a couple comments.
I'm going to restrict you, Del. We've got 11 minutes and 26, okay. 25, 24.
Okay, is this, I realize different cell providers use different frequencies. You'd mentioned AT&T. Do you know which companies are using the 800 meg band for their LTE?
In the U.S., all of them are using it for one aspect or another. Some of them are using 1700 meg as well. You can actually Google LTE frequencies United States, and the first three links will give you a pretty comprehensive chart.
Is this problem mostly in the 800 megahertz band then? It gets attenuated better by the higher frequency?
In the 8 to 9 range, yeah.
Okay.
I haven't run across any 1700 meg interference issues yet. Doesn't mean I don't expect to, but I haven't yet.
And you had mentioned one other comment about loose hardware at the transmitter site. I ran into an instance where there was loose hardware. This was a two-way interference complaint, but it would be applicable to LTE as well, where there was loose hardware on, it was actually going into their filters at the receive site, which was about 3 miles from our transmitter site. And they were claiming it was a harmonic issue. And again, as you suggested, we did some sniffing with a spectrum analyzer around their equipment, walked over quarter turn on an end connector, fixed the problem. They'd been chasing it for about 6 weeks. So don't forget loose hardware at the receive site itself if you don't see anything coming from your transmitter site.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be either the transmitter or the receive. I ran into an STL interference complaint once where the problem was an electric sign 5 miles away picking up the FM signal and re-radiating a harmonic through a loose connection. Okay, like I said, we're coming back to fox hunting here. It's anybody who's ever done a ham fox hunt, you're gonna be well in demand. Okay, Tom, and then Bill back in the corner there. I see Gary. No. Gary going the wrong way.
For 1700 TV, if you're UHF, you got to worry about your third harmonic. Bill Hamilton and I ran into that problem with the station. We were into a Verizon, but tube socket, the finger stock and stuff got old.
Okay, so there's a good point right there. If you didn't hear it, if you're running a TV station, UHF TV, third harmonic puts you into the 1700 band. Okay, so something to be aware of there. Yeah, Bill?
Just a point that if you're using a spectrum analyzer, it should be reasonably up to date. The older ones aren't going to have much. If you're using something like an old Tech 7L12 or something like that, your noise floor is going to be too damned high. Gary Scrignoli, in his 8VSB lectures, harped on the necessity to have up-to-date spectrum analyzers for, troubleshooting things with the 8VSB signal, and the same thoughts apply here.
Yeah, that's very, very true. I mean, we use Anritsu Spectrum Masters and Site Masters in-house a lot. And the thing we see is that even with the video bandwidth and the resolution bandwidth cranked way down, the noise floor is still only 100 to 105 dB down.
That's exactly it, because one of the things you have to be mindful on, I know I'm digressing a bit and I apologize, but the out-of-channel emissions with ATSC, the FCC put specs in place that could not be measured in a single pass with any spectrum analyzer on the market. You either had to sweep the performance of the mask filter, or one methodology that came into play is to measure the close-in, out-of-channel emissions with the spectrum analyzer connected normally. Then you buy a notch filter, which KOs the transmitted signal, and you calibrate the notch filter, so you need to look 2, 3, 4, 5 megahertz away. You at least know the insertion loss of the filter you're using, and it's a two-step approach. It's time-consuming, but it's doable. But
yep.
Again, it's the same idea. You're trying to measure stuff 100 dB down from your main, and same issues are apply.
Right. Okay, Mark.
Okay, my first experience with this kind of problem goes back over 10 years when a cellular company moved to a tower that one of my clients had a 50 kilowatt FM on. And what it came down to was the cell company from their building, 30 feet away, ran a coaxial cable over to the radio station's building, and that cable was connected to the output of their receive preamp. And in the transmitter building where the radio station was, I would take that cable, plug it into my spectrum analyzer, and get this, tune the transmitter. This was back in, you may have heard of tubes. They used to have those things, by the way. Anyway, I was successful in tuning the transmitter for a minimum on that eighth harmonic that was a problem.
Yep, yep, and that can be a solution sometimes. I mean, I've run into one situation that I know of where the issue was an actual radiated eighth harmonic. It was coming out of the transmitter 95 dB down, so it was legal. But in that case, just putting a low-pass filter on the output was enough to bring it down, enough to make AT&T happy. Might have been Verizon in that case, don't remember. But definitely each situation is going to be different. Oh, Art, hi.
Good morning. A do and a don't from one who's been there recently. Where you don't want to take your measurement is in your transmitter building for your harmonic radiation. Where you want to take it is in the easement to the cell tower site. Found out that that worked out a lot better.
Yeah. The only thing you're going to be able to measure in the transmitter building at all accurately is cabinet radiation. And I mean, again, you're only going to get a relative. If I point the log periodic at this location, I see a spike on my wave or my spectrum analyzer. Definitely, if you're trying to measure a radiated harmonic, that has to be done in the near field, away from the building.
Yeah, Jeff, following up on what Art was talking about, that whole 80 dB down kind of vaporizes if you move away from the tower. If you move into the null on a multi-bay antenna, all of a sudden, you know, you're in a 20 dB null, and that ninth harmonic is still out there because it doesn't behave the same way on the antenna.
Yep. Yeah. Now, as I say, though, remember that the vast majority, I mean, we're kind of getting off onto radiated harmonics versus cabinet right. emissions, right. and the vast majority of the complaints are for cabinet radiation.
Oh, yeah.
And every time I've seen an AT&T or Verizon complaint so far, is Sprint doing LTE? I haven't heard anything from them yet. I'm not sure if that's a good sign or a bad sign. But anyway, every complaint I've seen so far, the engineering report will point to a specific area where they think the interference is coming, whether it's antenna, line, or transmitter room. And then after that, they'll ask permission to enter the transmitter room, and they'll say, it's coming from your transmitter. Well, of course it's coming from your transmitter. That's what the transmitter is designed to do, produce RF and lots of it. In the back.
So, hello? Yep, all right. So tell us a little bit about this Yagi antenna. Does it need to be a calibrated antenna?
In that mythical perfect world, yeah, but remember, again, we're looking for a relative measurement. So if you've got a log periodic on 900 megahertz, roughly, that's going to give you something that'll pick up on the LTE band. Like I say, we're not trying to do an absolute measurement here. I just want to see, I'm aiming it around, I want something highly directional so I can point it in an area and see if I see a spike in that frequency range. So calibrated, no, not for this purpose. Again, it's like a fox hunt. We're just trying to figure out where the signal's coming from. Anybody else? Aha. Oh, no.
Oh,
wait,
no?
Wait. I'm going to sit down for this one.
All right. My name's Ed Trombley. I'm from Munrise. And this is a case where the broadcaster won. There was a 105.3 located on an AT&T tower, and they were complaining of interference into their 4G band. The broadcaster was going to be thrown off the tower. They weren't even going to give him a chance. So we went up there with dueling spectrum analyzers, mine and the guys from AT&T. And the first thing you have to do is have to teach them how to run their spectrum analyzer. because it was overload city. They had spurs on everything from DC to light. Well, this is the Reader's Digest version. When I finally got my spectrum analyzer set up to where I could see their 4G band, it had 8 separate spurs in the 4G band. And they were going, there it is, there it is. And we turned off the FM transmitter and all 8 of those spurs went away. But I was mystified why there was just 8 and not a pile of trash. Come to find out, they had 8 800 megahertz cell transmitters. And as we turned them off one at a time, all 8 of the spurs went away. Their own cell transmitters were spurring off of the 105.3 going in and coming out in the 4G band.
Yep.
Now, the tech I was talking to was Albanian. And he immediately thought I was blowing smoke somewhere where I shouldn't have been. After I got a hold of his superior and explained it to him, he said, oh, well, we just need some filters. And they bought filters, and the whole problem went away.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Intermod can be an issue in a situation like this.
Okay, we're out of time, Jeff. Oop. Jeff?
Yeah, I had to do mandatory PR sale or PR thing. There you go. You saw it.
Oh.
I did my sales pitch.
Thank you very much.
There's still 2 seconds left.